I'd like to discuss three unconventional questions on conventional mathematical problems. So the three unconventional things include asymmetry, that means non-symmetric, and the other one is called uniform, second one is called uniform soniton. Sonitons of same size. Because the conventional sonitons, they are one, you know, bigger one, smaller one, smaller one. They're the soniton sisters. And a third one is about the size of epsilon. So when we talk in empirical mathematics or in computational mathematics, we often have a problem of epsilon, and then what is the size of epsilon? Now, what are the conventional mathematics here? It will be a dynamic system, as the title of our symposium, evolution equations, PDE, bifurcation and stability. So these are conventional stuff. So there is the epsilon here, Now, when you do this water wave, the water going this way and flowing this in this direction, and then you consider this called a small, the weak nonlinearity, so the small amplitude water wave. Now, in order to make that physics meaningful, your epsilon is small but cannot be too small. So if you have water flowing this on a flat channel, the flat bottom, and then what happens, you have a dynamics called symmetrical dynamics. So what is symmetry here? Because when you have symmetry, you can have this, the group theoretical methods. And you form the knee groups, all other kind of groups. So then you have one point as a solution, and you can use group action, and you can find many other solutions. For instance, like inverse scattering methods, Backlund transform, all these kind of bizarre things. So this is conventional. Now, so if you put an obstacle here, and that becomes different. So what happens if you put obstacle here, and you want this so-called a small bump solution? So that means if you put, you can relate this epsilon to the size of this bump, this obstacle, and then this epsilon is only meaningful when it is between around 0.4 to 0.7. So if you talk about 0.1 in this physics problem, it doesn't have much meaning. Okay. If you don't have this obstacle, the epsilon could be around 0.1 or 0.2 or even 0.3. Okay. But in any event, if you talk about epsilon, say 0.05 or 0.01, in this kind of context, in this kind of material, this kind of physics model, it's meaningless. So when we do applied math or we do computational math, we always need to remember what is the size of our epsilon is. So this is my third question, but I first give you answer for that. Why is the battery thing? So so now we look at some kind of a specific type of fluid flow. So that is, your upstream velocity here is not too big, but it's not too small. It's like it's a perturbation around the shallow water wave speed. So what that is, you think about my the sound speed. Okay, sound speed is in the air is same as shallow water speed. In the shallow water wave speed, just like drop a needle stone in the pond, the wave would propagate at a shallow water speed. So you perturb the speed around this one, but because the epsilon is not trivial, so it's not too small, so this perturbation range can still be big. So with this, and you can get soniton solutions, all kinds of solutions which are not crazy. You know, like if you get it really fast, you know that this is a, if it is like jet, the impact with obstacle, you will get a white water here, and that, you know, is chaotic stuff or a turbulent stuff. So with this kind of assumption, and then your model equation is called a KdV equation, but with forcing. The forcing is due to the obstacle, and the U is the height, non-dimensional height of the wave. So this equation was derived only about 20 years ago. Right? And previously, the KdV equation were derived without this term is, this term is zero. So with that term is zero, you can have all kinds of beautiful mathematics. With this kind of stuff, all this kind of symmetric group theoretic method failed. So, and then because you look at the mathematicians try to imagine all kinds of things, say that, well, you have derived this forced KdV equation, and then you can say, well, I can generalize that. I can get a forced nonlinear Schrodinger equation. Okay. Now, so far, we have not found a real physical model for this thing. Okay. And also, you can do this forced Stein-Gordon equation. This one does have a physical model for chemical reaction, okay, chemical reaction kinetics, or Stein-Gordon equation. So now let's look at this KdV equation with forcing. So that is KdV equation with forcing. The control parameter is lambda. And this alpha is fixed, alpha beta is fixed number. And this is the number you can change. So this number measures the upstream velocity of the fluid. So if you upstream velocity is faster, the lambda is bigger, slower, lambda is smaller, or negative. So and then you ask a question, that can I consider a steady state flow? So that means without this T, this term is zero. If I do that, do I have one solution or two solutions or four solutions, etc.? So what happens is that if you look at, this can be computed out. I just drew it this way. This is the lambda is a solution parameter, and this is indicate how many solutions you have. This actually is the maximum height of the solution, maximum height. If you have a profile and the height, okay. And then so what happens is that when lambda is too small, this is zero. When lambda is too small, you don't have a steady state solution. So you can only have unsteady state solution. Okay. So that means unsteady state means that if you take a picture now and then take a picture later, they are never the same. Okay. And this one, when lambda is sufficiently large, and then you get a steady state solution, but you have two steady state solutions. One is lower, one is a smaller solution, and the other one is a bigger solution, the higher. And I will show you that this one is stable and this one is unstable. And then you look at when lambda is small, when it's sufficiently small, and you do get a solution, steady state solution. But this is it's oscillation wave, okay? And this is solitary wave. That means it dies out at infinity. So this is a case that suppose that P equal to 4.0, lambda is the parameter, alpha is the parameter, this is the parameter. So this P, alpha, beta, they have to be fixed. And lambda is your control parameter. And then, say, this is a steady state solution that is UT term is zero, so no T. Okay. And then this is your X, this is the U, so the solution of this equation. Now, so I approximate the right-hand side forcing by delta forcing. So what that is that the area, I consider that the obstacle's area as my P. So what happens, why do we do that? The experiments, this is from experiments done in Caltech. Experiments and numerical solutions show that the solution behavior basically depends on the area of the obstacle, not the shape of the obstacle. Well, this you can imagine. If you put a little obstacle on the channel, if you put a rectangular one or triangular one or elliptic one, they're pretty much the same. So, and then if you look at the solution, the one is the bigger one, the one is the lower one. So that is this is the lower one and this higher one. The two solutions. That's the lambda is greater than certain number. Okay. So that is like in this area. Okay. So that is two solutions. And then lower one. So what you do? So you consider this the full KDV with t, and then say use that steady state solution as an initial condition, and then you perturb this equation and run it. So how do you perturb this? You use the truncation, the numerical truncation error, as a perturbance. Okay, now why do we use the numerical truncation error? Because truncation error supposedly include all ranges of frequencies. So that is supposed to be white noise. Okay. So if my system is stable after being perturbed by white noise, that means that every frequency, it has gone through the test of every frequency. Okay. So you just show that when as time goes, this thing never change, so that is stable. This is one specific parameter. Oh, sharp. I mean, this sharp is because I use this delta forcing. So that's my approximation. That is artifact. So because I use delta forcing, I can find some analytical solutions in steady state, not in the unsteady state. But real physics, the real physics solution is rounded. And of course, when we use this, when you have this artifact for the sharp solution there, and then it gives you a little problem, how do you do that numerically to simulate the stability? Because if you use this finite difference, you know it's very hard to preserve a sharp point. By the way, we choose to use the spectral method. The spectral method is very good to preserve the sharp point by the continuous. Because that convergence is still 1 over n squared. So if you look at the higher solution, the higher sonitary wave, the top one, so that is use that as initial condition. And then, so this is t equal to 0. When t equal to 1, almost it's getting higher, a little bit higher. And then when t equal to 3, you can see that it's totally different from here. And then t equal to 5, you can see this kind of thing. What happened is this. This is the sonitum. And this is the lower sonitary wave. So what happened is the originally tall sonitary wave decays into this shorter one, okay, the stable one. And it radiates away a sonitum. So like this sonitum moves away here, and it moves away further. And then upstream, this side, this guy never changes its position here. And instead, this little wave is pushed away. So that what does it mean? It means that physics, the unstable profile decays into stable profile. And what is simulated here is that what is the process of that decay. Okay. So if you dynamic system, people would say, oh, there is a stable manifold, and then this way, how does this go from one initial condition and convert to that stable manifold? Okay. So, and then if you look at the three-dimensional type of picture, it goes like this, the uniform sonitone here. So what happens is that you put your forcing here, so that's what I use the delta forcing, that means it's approximation. This basically considers this an obstacle, function. Okay, so this is four FKdV, fourth KdV equation. This is x-axis. This is time. Our initial condition is zero now. So I started with zero initial condition. So now we have finished that steady state solutions. Now we're looking at, say, just solve the initial value problem of the time-dependent forced KdV equation. Okay. So not, this doesn't have much to do with steady state solution anymore. So what do you see is that, you see that as time goes, so here you get one soniton, and then here you get another soniton, same size. And then here you get three sonitons, one, two, three. And then here you get one, two, three, and four. Here you get one, two, three, four, and five, etc. Okay. So this is the generation of uniform sonitons, sonitons of same size. Okay. If you use group theoretic method, you can only get soniton sisters. So, and then what happens is, how do you know what do you get uniform, this uniform waves are really sonitons? You should go through Knishin tests. Because soniton sisters, the Knishin test, for soniton sisters, the Knishin test is easy. Because fast soniton goes faster, and it goes faster, and the smaller one goes slower, and the fast one always catches the smaller one, as Yuri showed on the first day, first lecture. So that was no problem. Now, because this, in our case, what happened, all the sonitons are same size, then you never catch the previous one. So what are you going to do? So the way to do it is that you can change the forcing, the obstacle. I change the obstacle size, and then I force different size of sonitons. Okay, so I increase the size of my forcing, and then this, I will generate two sonitons to catch previously two same size sonitons. And then let them collide and see what happens. Okay. So this is the way how do you do the forcing. So I do forcing. At the beginning, I use 0.4 as my forcing from 0 to 26.5. And then I stop for a while. I turn my forcing off for a while. And then I turn it on again, but with a bigger force. Okay, so the time goes from here, and then I turn off that again. Okay, so this is what you get for the condition. So that at the beginning, I have a smaller forcing, so I generate two sonitons. So this are not as sharp as those two. Okay, and then I turn it off, my forcing is off here, and then I turn it on again with a bigger force, and now it generates bigger sonitons that go faster, and then they have gone through this Knishin process. So this is the Knishin of uniform sonitons. And so we made a generalization this to the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. So that is, this is the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, and we put forcing here. Okay. This is we put a delta forcing. Our scheme can solve non-delta stuff. Okay. So what happens is that you can get this is this is x, this is t, the initial value problem. So what happens is that you get an oscillation at t at x equals zero. This is oscillation, and then this is a radiated wave. Now this is very much like some kind of a nuclear radiation. So you need to have some vibration inside your nuclear in order to radiate energy away. Okay. So this is oscillation. These are two radiated sonitons. So then you make the same kind of trick for the Knishin, like test. So that you get a force in, and then turn it off, and turn it on, and generate different kind of sonitons of different size, and then make them collide. Okay. So this is sphere oscillation. And this is the amplitude part. Because the solution is a complex So this is T, and this is X, a three-dimensional picture. And then you can do it for sine Gaudin equation. For sine Gaudin equation, so we have this force in here. Without force is a regular sine Gaudin equation. Now we are solving the boundary at infinity at zero. Now this solution, Urey also showed similar things to this and without force. Now with boundary equal to zero, you have this kind of thing. Okay, you have the little, you start from zero, and then because of force, you grow, and then you go oscillate, you go this way. Go up and down, and up and down, up and down, and you go up and down, and it radiates waves away. Now this solution, numerically say, well, nothing wrong, it's interesting. But physically, this is not too meaningful. A meaningful solution is that you should have a state transition. So that is, you should go from this constant here and go to another constant here. Okay, this is like in sine Gaudin equation, we call it kink. Okay, so Bob Almoni knows this already well, kinks. And they take derivative of that, that is soniton. Okay. But that numerically, that's awfully difficult. What happened? Because you do not know the size of the kink. You do not know the jump ahead of time. Okay. So the way to do it is, one way to do it is that you take derivative again. To get rid of this kinks. Okay. And I force the boundary to be zero. But that makes the equation more complicated. So far, we still do not have a good method to solve this. I just asked Urey, say, after this talk, you have to tell me what to do. Okay. How do you prescribe a boundary condition? So this becomes just like James Young said, that the solving of a differential equation is usually not a big problem. The big problem is initial and boundary conditions. That's what we encounter.